Good afternoon and welcome. Give a minute for everyone to arrive. Greetings and welcome to the Now webinar series, The Practice of Belonging. Welcome, everyone. We're so glad you're here for the very first webinar of the 2026 Networks of Opportunity for Child Well-Being webinar series called The Practice of Belonging. And I want to begin by grounding us in a simple but powerful idea that belonging is not accidental. Belonging is something we practice, belonging is something we design, and belonging is something that we care for and protect and uplift. And as we begin this webinar, we want to take a moment to also ground ourselves in language justice and access. And so I'm so honored to introduce our colleague, Jasmine from the Community Language Cooperative based in Denver, Colorado, who will be sharing more about our language justice practice for this webinar.
Thank you so much, Renee. Hi, everyone. Again, my name is Jasmine. Super happy to be here with all of you. I'm going to give instructions on language justice and accessing interpretation in both English and Spanish. So bear with me as I go through this information. Buenos días para mí. Mi nombre es Yasmin. Un gusto estar aquí con ustedes de nuevo de parte de la CLC. Voy a tomar el tiempo para darles un poco de contexto de la justicia del lenguaje y de cómo acceder a la interpretación simultánea. Así que denme un poco de paciencia. As far as language justice, it really is just about creating spaces where we can all speak and participate in the language of our hearts or the language that we feel most comfortable in. And so to facilitate that in this space, I'm going to be interpreting simultaneously to Spanish throughout this meeting. So I will ask that anyone who is not fully bilingual in English and Spanish to please go ahead and select your preferred language once we start this function. After I finish giving these instructions, you will see a globe pop up at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're joining us from a cell phone or a tablet, this option is found in the menu with the three dots. It says more. It's the same either way. Again, if you're not bilingual, just go in there and select the language that you would like to participate in. I also ask that folks, keep in mind their pace and their clarity. And we already chatted about this, but just, keep in mind that Spanish is longer than English, and so it takes longer to say the same thing. So thank you all so much for making the commitment to this space and to this practice. And I'll repeat this in Spanish. De nuevo, para facilitar este espacio, básicamente solamente queremos que todos puedan participar en el idioma de su corazón, que significa que es el idioma que se sienten más cómodos con el que, o el idioma de preferencia, ¿no? Para acceder a este servicio, vamos a encender la función de interpretación simultánea y van a ver un globo en la parte inferior de su pantalla. Ahí pueden hacer clic. Si no son completamente bilingües en inglés y en español, por favor, elijan su idioma preferido. Les pido que tengan en mente su velocidad y su claridad, que tomen su tiempo con sus palabras. Cualquier cosa que se les ofrezca, me pueden mandar un mensaje por el chat y con mucho gusto les puedo apoyar. Solo les pido de nuevo que tengan en mente que el español es más largo, así que toma más tiempo decir las mismas cosas. Thank you all so much for your commitment again, and we can go ahead and get started. Ya podemos comenzar. Gracias.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much. And please use the globe icon on the bottom to select your preferred language. Just a few quick housekeeping notes to help us move through our time together. Today's session is being recorded, and the slides and the recorded will be posted on the Now Forum, which you can access through the networksofopportunity.org website. We invite you to submit questions using the Q&A feature that you'll find on the bottom bar of your Zoom dashboard, and we'll hold space for audience questions later in the session. Also, please feel free to use the chat, share reflections, resources, connections as we move through the conversation. And there is an example of the Q&A button. And then just to give a quick flow for our orientation for our flow today, we're going to have just this brief welcoming and overview time, an introduction to Vital Village Networks and NOW, our practice of belonging panel discussion, followed by audience Q&A, and then we will close our time together. So if you'll allow me to just take a moment to share a little bit about the broader context that brings us together. I think many are familiar with Vital Village, but if it's your first time here with us, welcome. We are a national collective of diverse change makers and organizations that are really pioneering sustainable approaches to transforming child, family, and community well-being. Networks of Opportunity for Child Well-being is our national footprint and arm of this work, and it exists to advance social transformation and racial justice, partnering with individuals, organizations, and institutions and coalitions across the country, and working to build the capacity to equitably share power with communities that have faced ongoing racial oppression. This work is grounded in a guiding set of principles: belong, learn, engage, and transform. And these are not just ideas, but each of these are practices that shape how we show up, how we build, and how we move forward together. If you have not had the opportunity to connect with the NOW Innovation Forum, we invite you to use this QR code or go to the website so you can become connected and share practices beyond today's conversation. And now I'm excited to reintroduce this year's webinar series, The Practice of Belonging: How Do We Design Systems That Cultivate Shared Humanity, Connection, and Agency in Everyday Practice. And today's webinar is taking that lens around the practice of belonging and looking through the lens of birth justice. And this is really asking us to not move forward as an afterthought, not thinking about an outcome that we hope for, but what do we intentionally work to create? And birth justice calls us to consider not only care, but dignity, and not only access, but power and privilege, and not only outcomes, but wisdom and lived experience, and reminds us that belonging begins long before birth and extends across generations. And so we are tasked with building systems where people are not only supported, but truly seen, truly heard, and truly valued. So we're so honored to be joined by some incredible leaders today. And I am so happy to introduce our wonderful moderator for today's discussion, Aditi Subramanian, who is the Director of Infant and Early Childhood Mental Health Policy at the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Aditi's leadership cannot be summarized quickly or succinctly, but she bridges practice, policy, and systems transformation and brings a heart, a love, and a deep wisdom for infant mental health and well-being. And Aditi's commitment really extends to that, the like living in the practice that those closest to the challenges are also closest to the solutions, and belonging really must be built into the very fabric of the systems we create. And she's role modeled that so beautifully with her career. So welcome, Aditi.
Thank you so much, Renee. That is such a grounding opening. I so appreciate Vital Village and the NOW Innovation Forum and Renee and Corin and everybody for this really thoughtful and intentional space that has been co-created and for inviting us. Without any delay, I am so honored to be sitting and sharing space in this living room fireside chat circle with our dear panelists and speakers, Taylor Kelly and Stephanie Belnavis. Really in Renee, I was struck by what you were naming. Belonging really is a verb. And as we begin our time really hearing from these two amazing birth justice leaders, Steffi and Taylor, wanted to center in the words of Dr. John Powell, which really elevates, right, that belonging means more than just being seen. It entails that we have a meaningful voice and opportunity to participate into the design of societal and cultural structures, all parts of it. It's woven right into the fabric. It means having the right to contribute to and to make demands on society and political institutions. So without any delay, I am going to invite Stephanie, and Taylor right here with us. Hi,
Welcome,
Stephanie.
everyone.
All right, so welcome, Stephanie and Taylor. We are so honored to be sitting together in circle. Yes, you all will see their official bios are in the chat. And as we start our conversation together, I envision like a living room and we're all sitting together, right, in circle with everybody here who is on the webinar. And so we'll begin our conversation grounding in these four prompts that we receive from our Indigenous elders. And so I invite each of you, maybe Steffi, we'll start with you, and then Taylor will go to you. The four prompts that we received from our Indigenous elders are: who am I? Where do I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going?
Thank you, DT. Just gonna breathe in and let the words come. Who am I? I am Stephanie Diane Bell Nevis, named after Stephanie Powers and Diane Carroll, two 80s, 90s movie star, thanks to my mom. I am a differently abled Black and Indo-Jamaican American woman. I come from the beautiful island of Jamaica. I come from the prayers of Christine Arabelle and Myrtle Bell Nevis. I am here as a co-journeyer in this work in many ways, through many relationships. And where I'm going is always going to be in community. I'm not sure where the destination is, but it's absolutely going to be in a space that is in community, in support of, and with.
Thank you, Steffi. That is how I experience you and have known you for so many years. Taylor.
Thank you, DT. Who am I? My name is Taylor Kelly. I am a doula, birth assistant, advocate. I say that on like the professional level. I think on a more grounding level, I am a daughter first. I am a sister. And where do I come from? I am from Colorado. I've done a lot of traveling, but Colorado is my home. Whenever I go back to visit, I automatically feel grounded. I'm specifically from a city called Colorado Springs, and so we're a valley, and surrounded by mountains. And so I think that is always my outlook and motivation of just being surrounded by very high peaks and achievements. Why am I here? I am here to continue to be in spaces of belonging, share what belonging means to me, and where am I going? I always like to say I'm going to the top and I'm bringing people with me. Yeah.
Taylor, thank you so much for also really elevating that we are off land and we are connected to humans and humanity and also are a part of nature and connected with land. So I so appreciate you elevating, both of you sharing expansively all your humanity of how you're showing up here. And so I think, Steffi, you named really, you bring co-journeyer consistently in how you show up. And so I'm curious and want to open it up to invite both of you to share from your perspectives. What does belonging look like, feel like, sound like, smell like? In the co-joining that you hold with families that you serve and their children.
Taylor, do you want to go or?
I don't have a preference. Oh,
Right. For the my natural response to the question is always it feels very natural. It feels like the work. I'll specify more clearly in terms of this idea of being a co-journeyer. And I again really appreciated our pre-call to kind of get a sense of what this idea of belonging is. So for me in this context, I am currently, based in Massachusetts. I have been engaged in perinatal mental health for a number of years. And the co-journeying aspect of that is the being with families. It's the holding of hands, like visually, it's the holding of hands, it's the deep breath, it's sometimes the tension in the room, it's sometimes the laughter and joy and the moments of celebration. I'm a non-birthing person. I haven't had experience of physically birthing a child, but I have held the hands of many individuals who are navigating fertility, navigating pregnancy, navigating postpartum. And as a person who's not had the physical experience, there's oftentimes a discussion or a tension, I'll say, around how do I hold space with when I haven't. And I think I'm thinking of the ancestors, thinking of the elders in the work who continue to guide me. Co-journeying feels like a birthright. It feels like the decentering of me, actually, which I think it should be, the decentering of my experience and really this notion, this practice of how am I with others, how am I holding support, how are we holding accountability in the work. I more specifically, I'm a perinatal movement psychotherapist, so I work specifically with Black and Brown birthing folks. Here in Massachusetts, I also hold space for perinatal practitioners, specifically BIPOC individuals, so lactations consultants, birth doulas, individuals who are all kind of holding space for these families as well. And I also I'm a creative, and so again, co-journeying. How do I hold space from a trauma-informed lens, from a therapeutic lens, but also tap into the power of our stories? That is something that I feel like what it sounds like. It feels like this. It sounds like the stories that hold so much opportunities for healing and connectivity and repair, and also rupture and pain. And so, how do I journey with an individual? And also, as a practitioner, hold myself accountable as a co-journeyer as well.
Ooh. I'm gonna let that settle, let it swirl, let it sit. It feels like dynamic and active, Steffi. Thank you for bringing all parts of really relational accountability and struck by the, what does decentering look like when we're doing community, when we're being as human beings in community. Of bringing power dynamics right in, of really holding that part of like I am because we are, and so I so appreciate what does really being with look like and feel like for you, Taylor.
Thank you. Yes, Steffi. That was amazing. The first thing I think of with belonging is being able to show up as your full self without explanation. I can think of moments where I've entered spaces and have not immediately been asked, what do you do for work? What is your job title? And in those spaces, I come in. As I am, I'm asked, what things do I enjoy? And that has always been liberating. So I incorporate that into my belonging practices, especially with families. Belonging, I think, also feels very safe, like radically safe. And understanding, I have lots of intersectionalities. And with that, it's understanding and being in spaces that isn't that aren't trying to categorize or dissect, to be more palatable to different audiences. When I work with my families, I'm in my birth work, I am intentional about serving BIPOC families, serving queer families. I also identify as queer. So having that intentional lens, I think, keeps me focused as well. And I'm as I like continue to think about like what belonging sounds like, to me it sounds very still. And I would also say it feels warm and comforting as well. But at the top of all of that, it's knowing that no one should ever feel alone in the birthing space, or in a space titled belonging, and that we don't ever do this work alone either. And Steffi, as you were talking, I was also thinking through, like, as I'm also not a birthing person as well, I haven't given birth. I think part of that is my birth justice advocacy, and also this work is a calling. So I was gonna be in it whether I wanted to or not.
I definitely resonate with that, Taylor. I think, and it's beautiful to have Aditi on this call because she knows my journey very intimately. And I do feel like I was called to this work. It was not initially an interest of mine when I was in grad school until my final year. And I think the ways in which the layers of intricacy and love and community have really anchored this space for me. I lost the name being an immigrant, finding community in spaces generally can be really tough. And so it's so interesting as you're saying that, feeling like I really have found community to hold space for me, hold me accountable, and be with and in the perinatal space. That has been like one of the most beautiful surprises, I think, of as a practitioner to be able to feel like I belong, even if I continue to question that for the rest of my life, you know, still feeling like there is a space for me and my voice, my presence can be valued, and also mirror, especially racially, I think, in the spaces that I've been in. And ethnically, because I work with a lot of Afro-Caribbean or folks within the diaspora, having just even the importance of my presence there. Again, not centering me, but just knowing like a part of the relational conversation is this intersectional piece like you named. Yeah, it is making me reflect on the journey and the ways in which belonging can transcend, right? The ways in which I, you know, debated belonging 10 years ago is very different from a year ago versus today. So thank you for lifting that piece up. Yeah.
Say it again, both of you, again and again, right? I think the multiple beautiful layers of intersectionality that our I think dominant culture tells us that we have to be bucketed into certain buckets and not bring our whole tapestry of selves to really sit alongside and be at the feet of those we serve, who are from communities that we come from too, right? And I so appreciate you both naming so powerfully and so grounded. So I think I'm drawn to wonder about and invite you both to, you both brought up intersectionality in really it's radical, right? It's important for us to name that right into a system and designing systems of belonging. And so, as birth justice leaders, as human beings, as these amazing people that you are, intersectionality framework, pushes us right to really hold transparency, and by naming power structures and exposes how like each of us are sitting and positioned within these really complex systems. and how we need to design those systems, or dismantle and reimagine those systems. What does that look like for each of you? Maybe if there's an example that comes to mind from your perspective. And I don't know, Taylor, Steffi, go ahead. Yeah, just we'll flow.
Yeah, I think as you were saying, designing systems, I immediately thought of like reimagining systems for at center liberation. That was like the counter resistance that comes to mind, this idea of how are we centering liberation and the power and privilege that's connected to that, right? Knowing that not everyone is able to access liberation in perhaps the fullest way or full way for them. I think the first thing that comes also to mind is the decision to really center perinatal mental health in my practice is like pushing against the system. I can't tell you, I also teach at Liz University, and I can't tell you how many times in my conversations with students, they're like, so wait, what is that? What area of mental health is that? Like, is that a real thing? Right, right. And I'm like, actually, there's a lot of research and work here. Yeah, so I think like really choosing to center this work. I think also as well honoring histories is one of the biggest areas in terms of reimagining liberation for the folks that I work with. Really honoring our personal histories, and then the other part of it is our stories. I feel like coming from, yes, a creative wellness background, but really being trained as a therapist and a mover. Storytelling has been something that has, again, has been very unassuming, but very much accessible to everyone because we all hold our own stories and we all are, however you activate or act on it, we all are our own archivists. And so that has been something that has really been at the forefront of my engagement with everyone that I work with, whether you're a client, whether you're a colleague, or you're someone on the street. I'm always really inviting folks to think about the stories that we tell, the stories that we hold in our bodies, whether we're relying on verbal communication or nonverbal, how are we tuned into that or not? And without judgment, how do we support each other? How do we sit with each other through the joys of that and the hard spaces, and creating a practice around that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. That's great. When I think about reimagining systems, my first thought is like, burn it all down. I'm definitely a burn it down girly. Getting rid of hierarchies, because they're ridiculous, and they're not real. And I think reimagination, again, I agree with you, Steffi, of centering liberation. I think it is centering Black feminism, Black feminist thought. I think about queer theory, indigenous, just groundedness. Like it is, I mean, right, centering community and reimagination, and not having, I think sometimes it feels like community is on the outskirts responding. So it's that, and I think as I continue to reimagine, it's being in spaces to have the hard conversations, but also still continuing to center joy as I do this work. And I'm working with BIPOC birthing people, queer birthing people. It's centering that we have joyous birth outcomes. We can give birth, we create families, fighting the narrative of erasure on both ends. And I think of an understanding of what, right, I think systems try to very tediously put in place. I think some of the things that come up most with working with my queer families is always who can and who cannot sign a birth certificate. And like having that frame of thought going into this very sacred and beautiful birthing journey, is wild. Amongst the many other things you think about when you have like multi complexities. And I also think like reimagining is always bringing people with you, but it's also like you said, bringing those stories and uncovering those histories that a system puts in place to try to hide and erase. In my own journey, I'm continuing to do the work of finding who are my people and my lineage, who are also the midwives and the perinatal workers. And it's hard, very much because of the US's history and foundation, but it's there. So it's bringing that with me too.
And Taylor, thank you for really bringing into our space, right? We are currently sitting in and have been sitting in as this Black, Brown, Indigenous, and including our white allies, right? Sitting in really the echoes and realities of colonialism, enslavement, genocide, right? Where that is that there is a the intentional erasure and the danger of a single story, which even just both your responses are leaning so much into, like that resistance is pushing against that narrative. Like, no, there is no one single story, right? The sitting and listening at the feet of storytellers. I have a dear colleague and friend, Marie Celeste, who really invited this phrase of listening at the feet of storytellers, right? And what does that look like and feel like? In how you both are bringing healing justice every day, as really a practice of resistance. And I'm struck by you both naming when you said joy, right? That is also an act of resistance in the current socio-political climate, which unfortunately is not new. At the same time, the act of holding both and, right? We walk alongside in deep grief in community, and we also celebrate joy, and we celebrate the right and dignity to celebrate happiness in community. And so I want to invite you both to, you've named arts, somatic work, storytelling. It is all embodiment and is central to how you both show up. And so I want to would love to hear how embodiment is tied so woven so deeply into your practices of belonging. If you wouldn't mind sharing, maybe Taylor, you can start, and then Steffi, if you wouldn't mind taking it from there.
Absolutely. I think of embodiment, and I know Steffi, you'll agree with this. It's movements. It's dancing, along with joy. It is crying, that like just natural release as I help families in their birthing journey, whether it's right at home, right? We're gonna twerk at home, and we're gonna twerk in a hospital room as well. It's movement that like gets baby through the canal. And so I think about that. I think about sound and music, and I think what echoes more loudly is food. And I've always been a believer that food transcends so many languages. Like a good meal will bring so much comfort, you forget about what you're experiencing. And then I think in my hard moments when I need to ground, especially with like all the external chaos that goes on in the world, I think about my lineage, I think about my ancestors, and how this isn't new, right? A lot of what is going on is very repetitive. And because it's not new, right? I have strategy flowing through my veins, I have creativity in my blood. And like I'm not alone in this work, but I think what is most important is also resting, which I think I have to remind myself that every single day, and embodying that more.
Yeah, I'm echoing a lot. I was like head nodding and like, yep, to a lot of what you're saying. I think on a interpersonal level, I've found stillness to be one of the most powerful embodied practices, especially for myself, but also holding space for others, like really having moments of pausing. Also, prayer, whatever form, however that lands for you, whether you're, deem yourself religious or spiritual at all, just really kind of affirming your experiences and your desires of what you want to manifest. Similar to you, I love movement. I love all types of movement. And also, the routine of even walking. I feel like that is something. And I've had conversations with clients about this, of it being kind of an organizing tool, like a you just kind of have to let it out and let nature kind of bring it back to you in a ways that you can, whether it's an idea, whether it's working with a family who's navigating, vaginal birth or a C-section, and just wanting some time to kind of let universe or let nature support them in that way, freeing your mind. And I am also holding a space as a practitioner as well, because we also need tenderness and care and respite as well. So, mirroring a lot of what you're saying, Taylor. I also believe in journaling. I believe in documenting. If you are someone who, like me, I tend to, do a lot of voice notes. As my family says, I do a lot of podcasts, voice notes, because I send very long ones. But I send them to myself sometimes just to really kind of express and release. And bibliotherapy is something that I think is a really powerful tool. You don't have to buy 10 million journals. You can just find a scrap of paper. I'm a post-it queen. I have put behind my camera, I definitely have a lot of post-its right now. They also the piece around a somatic practice, I think, is again, how are we in relationship? Like, I love that you mentioned food. I definitely resonate. And I think sometimes it can really be a reset, to share a meal with someone, to prepare and share a meal with someone. I think also my reference to the arts is not so much on the performance side, but the experience of it. You may not feel like you're a mover, and that's fine, but you may go to a class that has a drumming, like live drumming, and that may be something that allows you to just re-engage and or release in terms of the body. And so I'm, always thinking of how do we develop our inventory, our embodied inventory, in this way to sustain us. Again, not shifting away from accessing, arts and embodied practices as solely a form of respite, but also like as a release and as something that really pours into us and really sustains us. It's not the thing to add to the to-do list, but something that is just so innate to you that it brings you joy, it sustains you. It can hold your anger and frustration, thinking again of the drumming classes, right? Because I feel like that also is a part of liberation. It is really stepping away from the norm or what is dominant in our society that may not necessarily speak to your cultural identity, to your gender identity, to your sexual orientation. Just really, really pushing against that and like leaning into the tension a little bit more.
Wish we were in person, we would be dancing together right now, moving our bodies together. I think Taylor, you mentioned, music and food. When I was birthing, one of the things that in the hospital bag packing was bringing music from my home. That was like the first thing that I was like, I need these tracks. I want this music to be playing in this space of this very sterilized room. I want to bring home in and food. So I so appreciate you, I think both of you expanding the way dominant culture hold arts as an embodiment, as something we have to do, versus like, I am in this body. And grind culture benefits from us really actually disconnecting and being disembodied. And so the act of resisting, the way you both have so beautifully said, both as human beings in serving the birthing people that you do, and as practitioners, right? The idea of what does it mean for us to consistently push against the narrative that consistently says, nope, be in your head, don't be full. In work that we're completely embodied. So such power. So to close our time together, we start this work, and I think I always think about how are we bringing our ancestors right into our spaces. I feel they're with us walking alongside, and you both named so beautifully. And so as we're closing, we know this work, whether professional or human and as community, and is the long arc work. It's across generations. It is holding our wildest dreams of our ancestors and borrowing from our descendants to come. And so in really holding this dreaming act ahead, how does it, especially at a time when the act of dreaming is being attacked, right? The very act of dreaming is being attacked. How does radical dreaming show up for each of you in the act of belonging?
That is great. The radical dreaming. I'll say before I answer that, I think something that you've touched on, Steffi, that is like sitting very strongly, like in my heart space, is the power of when you were talking about drumming. And I think about plants as being able to hold the anger and the frustration that is very rare, like very much real and experienced in this work that like. It can hold that. Whenever I see a tree, I'm always like, ooh, you done seen some things because those root structures are so strong. And thinking about drumming of like breaking up that like frequency and vibration in your body of stagnant energy. So I think I'm sitting with that as like my call to action to trust my environment to hold what feels heavy for me. And then in terms of dreaming, I think the reality is dreaming is one of those things that feels like it's always going to be intact, whether it's through forced languages, whether it's through removal of land, whether it's through made up beliefs of construct of who has access and what you need to look like. So it's continuing to keep dreaming and writing it down and dreaming, big and bright and boldly, and if you can, in color, in a multitude of languages, and dreaming with, I think, joy and limitless possibilities. For me, dreaming does include journaling, and I would also say walking, and sometimes just sitting with friends and gossiping about whatever we need to gossip about, just to always like be in community.
I'm resonating with that, Taylor, and I think initially when you mentioned the question, the invitation, Aditi, I like had to I took a little bit of a breath because I was like, wow, I am able to speak from a place of privilege, and I'm naming that I do have and know of and have memories, have lived experience, lived memories of my ancestors, my grandmothers, my uncles, my aunts, the oral historians and storytellers in my families that. I've been able to witness and hear and see the manifestation of their dreams as a guide, right? And know how, especially as a storyteller, as an archivist, how that is fully, completely rooted in their dreams and aspirations. I really think of my grandfather in particular. And then I also thought about the other side of the coin with that of the families that I have. More directly supported who may not have access to their lineage, whether folks are ancestors or earthside, but there is a fracture. And this invitation, especially through creative wellness, to invite them to think about their legacy then, right? Really focus on not to eliminate and not to avoid or create distance, but really have them feel more anchored to your analogy, Taylor, into their tree, their roots. The ways in which they will be anchors for their children, their nieces, their nephews, their community in different ways. So I definitely hold the space of privilege to be able to like say yes, like I fully have experienced and continue to engage in radical dreaming. I think it's just something that is innate to me. And I do think it's something I try to offer if it feels accessible to folks who have a similar lived experience or who definitely don't have that context as well. So I think speaking to like the complications of dreaming and how it can be really, really, really complex and deeply rooted, but it's individualistic in its essence. And I think that's amazing. That is also helpful for us to bring different experiences around the table, or maybe we're not at a, maybe around a tree, as Taylor's saying. Maybe we are singing and leaning and rocking with this tree, playing with its roots. So that's what came for me in terms of just the different stories that dreaming can tell.
Yeah, and holding, thank you both, right? Naming the holding of you so powerfully again, bring in what does power and privilege look like and feel like? And I'm imagining, the may it also be so that it's a tree with connected roots, and there is a forest with all trees that are connected under. Maybe it's a mangrove with trees that are sustaining one another, right? Like in our radical dreaming in community, what does that look like? What can that look like? And I think, Steffi, I was struck by your practice sitting alongside families you serve, of the invitation of what does it look like for them to be living ancestors for, right? Others. And so delicious to be with you both in space. I'm deeply honored, and feel like I feel like we're in a living room. I also wish we were in person. And so before we open it up to questions, I wanted to actually, I think words that you both were saying were bringing up a poem that I wanted to close us off with before we open it up for question answers. Talking about radical dreaming, and there is a poem by Adrienne Marie Brown called Radical Gratitude Spell, and wanted to share those words because the way you both have been naming how you show up and who you are really elevating this for me so much. And so I'll read the words, and I think an invitation for folks in the room, in this big living room that we all have, to take a breath, notice where it lands on your body. So it's Radical Gratitude Spell. You are a miracle walking. I greet you with wonder in a world which seeks to own your joy and your imagination. You have chosen to be free every day as a practice. I can never know the struggles you went through to get here, but I know you have swum upstream, and at times it has been lonely. I want you to know I honor the choices you made in solitude, and I honor the work you have done to belong. I honor your commitment to that which is larger than yourself, and your journey to love the particular container of life that is you. You are enough. Your work is enough. You are needed. Your work is sacred. You both are here, and I am so grateful. Thank you so much, Stephanie and Taylor, for bringing all parts of yourself into this circle with all of us this morning, this afternoon. We're going to open it up to questions, comments from our participants. Feel free to submit your questions either using the chat box or the question answer feature. Yes, sorry, the poem is called Radical Gratitude Spell by Adrienne Marie Brown. We'll make sure we send it at the end with the follow-up with the webinar. I wonder, Steffi and Taylor, as we're waiting for questions or responses, you both are, there's so much happening in community that you are leading and you are supporting. Steffi, I know there's something coming up that you are in centering storytelling, and I wanted to open it up to you to share with all of us what's coming up.
Thank you, DT. Yes, I have been working over the past 2 years on a project, which has now evolved into a four-part documentary series called Midwifery and the Black Birthing Family. It is following 10, sorry, 11 Black women who are residing or from the Massachusetts area, navigating their stories around Black birthing, their experience with midwifery, working with doulas, and the various ways in which midwifery has impacted their story. So if you are in the Massachusetts area, we are doing a pre-screening of the origin of the project on April 4th. I will drop it in the chat. It is a free screening at Marin Thurtle in Cambridge. There is a Eventbrite link. You can RSVP. We have a few more spots open. It's April 4th at 5 o'clock at the Marin Thurtle in Cambridge. So I will drop it in the chat.
Cannot wait. Okay. Taylor, I wanted to turn it to you if there were there was parts that you wanted to share with everyone here.
Not that I can think of. I make sure to put myself, continue to put myself at different birth justice and reproductive justice conferences. Sometimes at them, I will talk about queer birthing because I think it's important to always bring it into the conversation, especially if we're talking about inclusivity. But yeah.
Thank you, Taylor. And both Taylor and Stephanie's all of our emails and access will be sent to everyone. But Taylor, if you wanted to drop your contact details in the chat for everyone to have. And Steffi, we have a question from Katie. Can folks outside of Massachusetts have any access to the film?
So not for the pre-screening, but when we have the official launch in August, there will be a virtual component for folks who are not in Massachusetts. So in August, listen out for it. You can follow, you can email me, and I can give you more information. But for the pre-screening in April, no, that's just in person. But in August and onwards, we will have a online portion, online premiere.
Fantastic. Okay, we have a question from Antonia, and I'll open it up to both of you. And we could so while actively navigating and working in institutions that perpetuate extreme violence and harm, how do you sustain your personal north? How do you maintain and make sure that you not deviate from your full authentic self?
That is a wonderful question. I think one way I stay authentic to myself is making sure I have individuals around me who are also going to hold me accountable, especially working within systems and structures. It can create almost like a bit of a desensitization and autopilot effect. And so, I also love surrounding myself with amazing people in this work who are doing this work as well. And then I also remind myself a lot of times these systems have as much power as you give it. While yes, they are working as they are intended to, what they don't have at the heart of it is humanity. And what they don't have at the center of it is definitely the communities that are in the margins. And so knowing that that is what I bring and I show up with keeps me centered.
I'll also just add as well, I was literally just going to say the same thing to Taylor in terms of community. I think another reminder that I have is really remembering my why and who I am really there to support. So having the awareness of the challenges of so many very harmful systems, problematic systems, but also understanding even more so that's probably the bigger reason for me to be there and why am I there? Who am I holding space for? And am I actually ensuring that I'm aligning with my clients or the individuals that I'm there to serve and advocating for them as well? So the theme of advocacy always kind of comes up of like, okay, this is what is how it's impacting me. And again, how does my support space hold space for me, but ensuring that I can realign as much as possible to be able to advocate for the community members that I'm usually, there for.
Thank you both. Really centering both advocacy and finding community in order to continue to show up in systems that are designed exactly the way to function. And Taylor, thank you for naming, like, we don't need to feed it, right? We have another question from Natasha. First, deep gratitude to both of you for sharing all your hearts and wisdom today. And can you share more about extending belonging, to fathers, other partners, queer families?
Oh, I love this question. I don't know if there's folks on this call who are maybe the first, and when I say the first, meaning the first in their advocacy group to be talking about these issues. That is definitely very true to my experience, and I think it's one of the most beautiful things in a sense of shattering myths about birth and birthing and the perinatal mental health space or health space. I think this is a conversation for everyone. And I think if folks are doing programming or planning or in policy work, how are you also including the family, the village, the community? I do a series called Native Offerings, and it started off with just centering birthing individuals, but has become spaces where grandmas are joining. We have uncles and aunties and older siblings are joining. And I think about the family system and the ways in which the work that we do impacts everyone. And so I think it's such a good question because it really is a space where we should be propelling more conversations and connections and opening avenues for other family members, other community members, the birthing partner, even just acknowledging, hey, how is the experience of the birthing partner? How is the experience of the older sibling or grandma? How are you as a birthing person reparenting yourself through birth, right? So I get excited because I feel like there's so many opportunities here, and I do feel like my two cents would be always ensuring that you are providing opportunities for others to be joining the conversation. Sometimes it's important to really specify who spaces are for. I'm not saying, that has its place. And also, we have to think a little bit broadly about like the community as well and how do we care for the community as well.
Steffi, Taylor.
That was great, Steffi. Yes, incorporating the community. And I think for me, it is always this lens of, I think belonging sometimes can get trending and nuanced. And like, I think now what we see is like, there definitely is like, I feel like unintentionally not enough dialogue around our fathers and fatherhood into the conversation, as well as birthing partners. But for me, that is like always included. And when we forget that, we also perpetuate stereotypes, right? Which I think is also a systematic tactic. And I think I agree with Sebi, like it's also acknowledgement when I have fathers, dads, birthing partners in the room, they're always acknowledged. I think a lot of times in some hospital systems, you hear the remarks of, oh, they're just sitting there, they're not doing anything. But the presence and the power of them sitting there is, I mean, changes birth outcomes drastically. And so I think also it is incorporating who should be in the space and in the room when it comes to birthing and who should not be in the space. And I think that's where I hone in on my advocacy as well, respecting the wishes of my families. As being that, like, I think the word that comes to mind is like stronghold of making sure, like, this is your space, we are centering you. But again, it takes community and village at different points in the journey, not just immediately in labor, but it is postpartum, especially postpartum, and it is prenatal. It is understanding that people are working and have jobs that aren't always tailoring to you taking off because your spouse or partner or loved one is in labor. So it's acknowledging all of those complexities.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Can you all just please join me in thanking this incredible panel, Aditi, Stephanie, Taylor. This has been an incredibly honest and tremendous discussion. I know there are so many questions. The village is all woken up and excited. Please continue to add your questions to the chat, and I am sure the panelists will be able to reach out to respond to all of them digitally. Just thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. I think we had the opportunity to bear witness to so many incredible truths and journeys, and also really challenge ourselves to think about where are there places where people are experiencing belonging as they're engaging with us, and how do we deepen that? So I think we are all called to action by these incredible, incredible stories and comments today. So thank you all so much for this wonderful way to kick off the webinar for this year and a call to action for 2026. I'd just like to close by inviting you all to stay connected. There are so many ways, obviously, reflecting on the powerful narratives and stories that have been shared today. What's resonating with you? What levers of change are you feeling compelled to focus your intention on? How are you thinking differently? And what action might you take right now based on this conversation? We're also inviting you to enjoy some upcoming events just a few weeks away. We have our first peer learning cluster workshop, sustaining our advocacy, focus on the worker, not the work. So please sign up to join us on April 14th. Sharing a resource, our Now Playbook, that is freely available online around transformative community capacity to advance equity, sharing our dignity-centered guide to reflecting on cooperative funding structures, something that is useful for all of us, especially in these times. And thank you. Please continue to stay connected. We're so glad that you joined us today. We know that there are so many folks in the room who have stories to tell, and we invite you to continue to share with us. Thank you and be well.